Good morning. I would like to talk about many things that are dear to my heart today, and a few of them are koans. There's a tradition in Zen of stories of ancient teachers and their relationship with their students. And these stories have been written down. And then we get these big compilation books of all these stories. And so it's interesting to work with the koans. And today I'd like to work with the koan of the rhinoceros's fan. And let's see, I've written it down. You know, you're going to have to help me flip these. Thank you so much. So it's from the Book of Serenity, which is one of these compilations, number 25. I think its title is The Rhinoceros Fan. So the teacher, Yan Guan, said, "Bring me the rhinoceros fan." So I have to apologize. I always have to apologize. Endless apologies. In the 21st century, a rhinoceros fan is a really terrible thing. It's made, you know, from the tusk. So, but when this was written, which was probably in 800, I don't think they had that relationship. So if you can let go of the horror of taking the tusks from these animals and making them into objects, then we can proceed. Okay. So this is a fan made from a rhinoceros's horn, like ivory kind of fan. So it's like, and right now, Seamus is the attendant or the Jisha. So it would be like me saying to Seamus, "Would you bring me my fan?" And the attendant said, "I'm sorry, but the fan is broken." And then the teacher said, "Well, if the fan is broken, bring me the rhinoceros." And then the attendant had no reply. Okay, so there's one other piece of the koan I'm saving. But this is the beginning of the koan. And I must say that for at least 20 years, I had no idea what they were talking about. So if you're in that position, don't worry about it. Just let the Dharma rain fall on you, and when you're as old as me, you'll get the koan. So what I would like to talk first about is that the fan is broken. In the 90s, when Clouds and Water was first starting, we didn't have a building. And I had a small study group in a church in Minneapolis, and we listened to Pema Chodron's tapes. And it was just the beginning of the rise of Pema Chodron's fame. Not that many people knew about her, but she was already starting to be quite famous. And we had a group, it was a pretty strong group, 15 people maybe. And we got together every week. It lasted many years, really, of listening to her tapes. And that was the first time I heard. And, of course, when you talk about Pema, you're also talking about her teacher, which was Trungpa. It was the first time I heard Trungpa's idea that the core of human life is unrequited love. Unrequited, that's exactly what I don't want to hear. I want to hear that human life is requited and we can be satisfied and we can find the love that we deeply want. So really, it turned me and my husband. My husband is a Buddhist by osmosis. But he went to these Pema Chodron tapes because Pema Chodron seems to penetrate anybody. Not, you don't have to be a Buddhist to get a lot from her work. Anyway, it turned us both on top of our head. It completely turns us upside down to contemplate the idea that the core of human life is unrequitedness. So I've been contemplating this for several decades. What do they mean by that? And it's very similar to the First Noble Truth, that in a human life, there is quite a bit of suffering or dissatisfaction. And really, practice is to learn, what do we do with our constant dissatisfaction? And the minute I said constant, I thought about that song, Constant Craving. Right. What do we do? And I can watch it all day long. And I'm a senior Dharma teacher. And maybe it's because I can watch my constant craving for satisfaction all day long. And I take a cotton ball of the Buddha medicine and I dot it. Every time that craving, that I should be satisfied, I should be happy, I should get what I want, my children should be healthy, happy, and prosperous, all these things that we want, I have to, every day, many times a day, dab that with Buddha's medicine. If I don't do the medicine part, I am quite dissatisfied with life. I call this samsara. This is the endless circling of the human world. When we think that there's a permanent self, when we think our stories are true and solid, when we want what we want, when we want it, all those things that make up a human life, these are what I would call broken. So I've often said that samsara is already broken. Your life is already broken. Nothing you can do about it. And Katagiri Roshi had, as usual, had a cool way of talking about it. He said, in the arising of something, the dissolution is already there, inherent. In the arising of a life, the death of that life is already there. In the meeting, when you meet with someone or you love someone, the letting go of that person is already there. Right? So this is what they mean by it's already broken. And we know this. I'm pretty sure everyone knows this because life is very hard. Don't you think? It's not that easy to get through a life. There's disappointments, there's death, there's illness, there's losing your job, there's going to the doctor and him saying you have cancer. There are many, many things that make a life difficult. So I take the fan as broken to be my reminder that samsara is already broken, that inherent in my life is my death. Inherent in all the gains and achievements, I'm quite achievement-oriented. Look, I'm sitting at the head of the class, you know. But in my achievement, the loss of achievement is already there. Right? This is the truth about how life works. So when he said, well, if the fan is broken, then bring me the rhinoceros. So if you only stay with the fact that the fan is broken, if you only stay with samsara is broken, we might as well kill ourselves, right? That I took a big leap there. But do you get the progression that if you keep staying with that, where you end up is a miserable pool of I hate life? And we get there every now and then, don't you think? Self-pity and anger at you didn't get what you wanted. All of this, how we grind down. I had a lot of shame. I'm happy to report that I've grown out of it. But when I was a younger person, that nearly killed me. This, I'm a bad person, I'm a bad person, I'm a story, that story. So, how do we live a sane and happy life? A life of usefulness. If the world is already broken. And certainly if you look at the newspaper, it's pretty darn, gosh darn broken, you know, when I look at the newspaper. And we can start our day, and most Americans start their day looking at the newspaper. We get a good chunk of nihilistic thinking, right? So bring me the rhinoceros for me is I have to be in touch with the source of life. What made the fan? Who gave their nose to the fan? And this is one of the reasons why I meditate every day. Because meditation is one strong way to have a connection with the source of life. Now, the word source, we could use the mystery of life. We could use a more technical term in Buddhism, total dynamic functioning, the working of the world. Katagiri used to call it universal perspective, getting a perspective that is huge about what life is. But for me, that's the counterbalance to that samsara is broken. And you could call it nirvana, right? These are the opposites. The source, if we can have contact with the mystery of life, something else starts to happen. Something else starts to happen. And for me, I really can't do this if I'm not stopping every day, pausing or stopping, and sometimes that's called meditation. I'm even more into it now, and I'm not into it as much as I used to be. I used to think it was I had to do it all day long, and maybe for a while I did have to do it all day long, but now I just have to touch it, taste it, be near it. The mystery of life. And that can rejuvenate how I go through my day. When I was 19, 18 maybe, I think I was still in high school, I read this book called The Sacred and Profane by Mircea Eliade. I think that's how you pronounce it. And really, that book kind of changed my life. And it was the beginning of learning about Buddhism, where I think in Buddhism, our practice is to honor the ordinary or honor what he called the profane, but I like to call it the ordinary, but see that that form is also sacred, is also the mystery of life. And that never, ever ends. That's the real truth. That the two of them are constantly meeting. And they meet in the present moment. And I just thought, and you can't taste the present moment if your mind is going crazy. So that's another reason to meditate. It took me a long time a long time to calm or interrupt or see through the craziness of my mind. And for a long time, I'd sit when I meditated and I would just watch. Oh my God. So my first enlightenment was how crazy I am. Look at that. It's just going around and around, never ending. And then I meditated more and I began to be able to stop it, to interrupt it, to pause it, to breathe with it, to let there be a little space in my head. Let there be a little silence in my head. And all of a sudden, when there was a little silence in my head, I could touch the miracle of life. And it's there. If you look out the window, you can see it. If you look inside, sometimes at night, you know, we do these prayers at night. And one of the things I do at night is thank my heart. I can't believe that that organ has been pumping for 64 years. And I haven't had, thank God, knock on wood, I haven't had that much trouble with my heart. But that's a miracle that's occurring every moment that you're alive. The body is a total miracle. However you can get in touch with the miracle, I beseech you to do it. So that you can handle what's happening on the surface of life, in the karmic, samsaric part of your life. And particularly if things are difficult. I just went on a fabulous vacation. I just loved my vacation. I was gone for 3 weeks. Well, I was gone from clouds for a month, but I went on a road trip, which was kind of a, what do they call it, a bucket list thing. It went beyond my expectations so much. I saw a lot. I was very healed, and I went to beautiful places. I was in the Rockies and Santa Fe, these very beautiful places. The miracles, quite, you really can't go for a hike in the mountains and not see the miracle. You know, it's really shockingly present. And I was with someone who was hurting a lot, many, many losses in her life. And I visited two people who are sick, one who's dying, definitely. So it was a real mix. And what I saw is when the shit hits the fan in your life, when things are really, really hard, actually what you need to do is dig deeper and get in touch with the mystery more, very deeply. Like the woman that was dying, whether she understood me or not, is I, at that moment, I thought, oh, I have to show up as a Zen priest. That's what my dear mentor needs right now. So I just did. It was amazing. I just pulled her up, you know, Byakuren, get here, you know, get to it. And I opened my mouth and I started talking about death to her. And I've accompanied people on their journey to death in my years as a priest, several people. So I knew kind of what to say, like, you know, don't be afraid and your body knows how to do this. And I thought, you totally need to be in touch with the miracle of life in order to handle your death. You totally have to know that you're more than your story. You totally have to, you don't totally have to do anything, but it's very helpful to have already cultivated an idea that death is a release, that death is going back to the miracle, that you're letting go of all your stories and it's going to be all right. As opposed to death is an annihilation of your life. When you think like that, no wonder we're afraid all the time, basically, you know. But that's not actually what death is. And you learn that through studying and meditating in Buddhism. Did we do this? Oh, I didn't say anything about the attendant had no reply. So when someone is silent in the koans, it's a wonderful place to project onto. So the projection usually is, oh, that doofus didn't know what to say back, or he's stumped. And how often have I been that doofus, you know, where someone says something real zenny to me and I'm like, I don't know what to say back, you know, especially all through the koans. It's like, what do they call it, deer in the headlights, like, I'm supposed to say something after he says, bring me the rhinoceros, you know. So you could interpret it like that, or you could interpret it the reverse, that he had the Malakirti silence. He had the silence of presence, and that's the rhinoceros. He did bring the rhinoceros back through being with the source. So both of those are probably true, depending on who you are and where you're at and how you're interpreting it. Now, often there's another line, sometimes two, and I never know, you don't know time-wise where this happened. Did this happen right away? Did someone else come up and do this next part? Or did this happen 2 or 3 years later when they were discussing the koan and someone did it? So we don't know about the time of this. You want to help me again? Thank you. That's the only problem with having this high. I can't do it. Zaifu drew a circle and wrote the word rhino inside it. What a joke! Wonderful. No, I'm assuming he's another practitioner, not the same attendant, but a third person answered the koan by drawing a circle and writing rhinoceros. Of course, he would write it in Chinese, right? So I decided I would do that. What does it feel like for me to make a circle and write the word? Is this an expression of the source in action? And I have to say, it really felt great to do it. So a lot of Zen is about your action in life. We so misinterpret this as, because samsara is broken, I'm going to get away from samsara and I'm just going to live in peace and mindfulness and kind of like a zombie. You know. But that's not what Zen is about. Zen is not about withdrawal from life. Zen is about, how do you participate in your life with the source right near you? How do you see your life through the eyes of wisdom so that you can figure out what the heck to do? Should you turn right or left? Should you love your kid or put boundaries on your kid? Should you stay at the Zen Center, leave the Zen Center? All these questions. We have to bring our practice totally into the question at hand. And what do we do with it? And I really felt this was a great answer. And other people did too, apparently, because it's, what, 1,500 years later, and we're still talking about this person who drew a circle and wrote the word rhino in the center. And I'd just like to keep investigating this, because when I was younger, I thought, this isn't the right answer. He's using a word. And I've been taught in Buddhism, the word is not the thing. The word is an abstraction, and the thing has the energy. So how is this word, rhino, have anything to do with bring me the animal rhinoceros, right? So there's a lot of something interesting to investigate. So I got out my language chart. Oh, actually, let's do this chart. I'm backing up about the source and the form coming together, the sacred and profane. This is my favorite chart that I got from Okamura Roshi. So these things are linear time. So this is the time of the form world, the samsara of the form world. We plant a seed. If it has water and sun, it grows, becomes a tree, it flowers, and it fruits. This is cause and effect, karma. We get born, we're a child, we're an adult, we have old age and illness, and then we die. So this is the developmental process, and really all of us know this. This is the lifespan. This is the world of form. Now, how do we bring the source into it? So underneath here is the source or timelessness, the eight no's. I like, this is from Thich Nhat Hanh. He has the eight concepts and the eight no's. The eight concepts. So concepts are how we think of the world. Birth and death, permanence and dissolution, coming and going, one and many. When we think, it's always a dichotomy. The eight no's are negating our concepts. No birth, no death, no permanence, no dissolution, no coming, no going, no one, no many. It's timeless. Kind of like the attendant who was quiet, right? So, but, this is a big but for me. If I keep these two separate like they are on this chart, I'm living in the concept world that they're different. What Buddhism says is that they are completely interdependent, co-arising, the total dynamic functioning of the two. So, in each moment, the source, at least red, is the mystery is present in every moment. And they call that the Dharma position. Katagiri Roshi used to say, is a 4-year-old child less than a PhD? Is this less than this? Is the seed less than the flower? No, they're completely full or empty, full of the mystery of life every moment. Okay? And they come together. This chart has really changed my practice. I have to say, this is one of the things I love. I use this chart all the time because it helps me. Whatever is going on is it. So if I'm depressed, that's it. If I'm on vacation and it's fabulous, that's it. If I'm sitting in front of someone who is dying, that's it. That's the Dharma position that contains the source. And really, I feel like this is where I found my freedom. I still acknowledge my story. I have a personality. I have a whole karmic life. But I'm really trying now to see every part of my life as the mystery. So I'm not picking and choosing very much anymore. And it's given me a great freedom to live a little bit more down here and less attached to my story constantly going. And I have a very negative centered mind, so my story is often negative. Okay. And the last thing I wanted to talk was about words. So this is the primary teaching on words, that words are not the thing. So what happens is something arises, we name it, then we elaborate on the name, we give a story behind the name, then we cling, we are attached to the story we make up, and then that story turns into opinion and belief. These are called the four layers of naming, but I add the fifth, so I just decided I'm going to change it. Everybody knows I added this one, but I'm going to just now teach the five layers. And the fifth that I added is then you fight about your opinion. You hold it, and then you have to fight about it. So for the most part, we deconstruct language in Buddhism. Language is not the thing. So why did this Kai put a name, a word, in, as the answer to the koan? I think I got it. Okay. He put a word. That's not the answer to the koan. I learned that words are not it. So just that he screwed that part up is great. Right? I can't stay with my opinions that words are not it. And so, and I just visited Natalie Goldberg, who's a word person, and she's always fought for words are it. So, this brought up another koan for me. Why are words, why can a word be the source? Since I just learned that they couldn't be. Why is, could language be the source? Why could a convert, why could this lecture be this mystery? Why could a conversation with your loved one be the mystery? Or a conversation with the person you hate? Why is that the mystery too? T-O-O. So there's another koan. It's called the rice cake koan. When Zen master Kyogen became a monk, his teacher asked him to say something about himself before his parents were born. Right? So this is a very classic Zen. Say something about who you are before your parents were born. Right? Say something about that. And he couldn't answer. Day after day for years, he contemplated. What should he say? And finally he said, a painting of a rice cake doesn't satisfy your hunger. A word about a rhinoceros should not satisfy the answer to the koan. But Dogen, our favorite person who puts everything upside down, he wrote a whole fascicle on why a painted rice cake does satisfy your hunger. I remember the lecture from Katagiri Roshi. He changed that to a hamburger on a billboard. How does that satisfy your hunger? And this has something to do with the first koan in the sense of how do we get satisfied in life? How do we mend the unrequitedness of life? It's a big question. What do we do with our cravings? So, Dogen implied, from my point of view, that a picture of a rice cake is like our samsaric form life. It's the stories of our life. It's our ups and our downs and the dental floss and the soup spoon. It's all the projections. I've been really studying projections. I've been writing blogs about projections. Maybe the next time I'll see if I can talk about projections. All the way our mind projects life through language and through other things. But we can't be human beings without that projection. That's what a human being is. We use our minds, we project things, we make up stories, we build cities. That's what we do. So this is what Dogen said. There is no remedy for satisfying your hunger other than a painted rice cake. There's no way you can satisfy your own particular life other than totally getting into your own particular life. That's the way to satisfy it, is to totally be in your life. Without painted hunger, you never become a true person. Without all the words and the stories, and even though they're delusions, they call them, or projections of our mind, there's no way to be a real person without them. Isn't that so loving, I feel? I used to feel this with Katagiri Roshi. I would come in and beg him to please help me find a way to escape my life. Please, let me go to Sishin. Let me go to a monastery. I don't want to be in my life. And he would just refuse. He would just turn me around and say, go back, deal with it, you know. Deal with your husband, deal with your asthma, deal with your stupid family or whatever I called it, you know. And I thought, that's not Zen. I'm not supposed to be in my life. I'm supposed to transcend my life. Isn't that what they mean? But Roshi never allowed me to do that. He was very strict, that it was not an escape. That I had to deal with my own karma to become a true person. Our life can't even be looked at without our painted life, the stories of our life. For some time, study all of these as a painted rice cake. And when you understand this meaning with your body and mind, you will thoroughly master the ability to turn things and be turned by them. That's such a sweet phrase. The ability to turn things and to be turned by things. So I've always used this image of about effort in my life. That you do have to do something. You can't just You can't just sit on your cushion and be quiet. You'd starve to death, basically. And even if you're at a monastery and people are bringing you food, still, you can't just do that. That's not what Buddhism is about. Buddhism is about learning to take an effort to create something, to do something. And then to also have space in your life for the world to react. Now, if you're anything like me, I don't have spaces in my life. I'm just trying to control everything and do and get it done. And I've had to learn how to receive what the Dharma gives me. And other people who are on a different side, they don't know how to do. They just think, well, lying on the sofa and watching TV is about all I can do. And then nothing happens in their life, right? So those people have to learn how to push the wheel a little bit, and then they can receive. But it's extremely active. To participate in your life is an extremely active thing. Even though we have to learn how to pause, which is non-active. Production and non-production. They have to be happening together. If this is not done, action and quiet, the power of the study of the way is not yet realized. To enact this ability is to actualize the painting of enlightenment. So he's even saying enlightenment is a painting too. Because it's a concept. What is real is just the activity of life in this moment. That's mindfulness. That's all that is really real. And this was a very active, participatory thing, and it got it across, I think. And anyway, you can't bring the rhinoceros to the teacher, the real rhinoceros. The real rhinoceros is dead, I think, once they take the horn off. So what did he mean, bring me the rhinoceros? Bring me the activity and the excitement and the vitality of this present moment. And be able to quiet your mind so that you can receive as well, right? That to me, wow, is really exciting to think of living life like that. And to where I get hung up is when I'm too attached to the story. Because the story will not satisfy you. That's the point of this. Although we have to deal with the story is our life. We can't escape the story, but we have to deal with the story as the source itself. Your life is the source itself. And then we get together and we make the source together, and then the trees and the birds and the sky make the source with us. Everything starts to move together if we're not so egocentric. So this understanding that I've been trying to express has helped me be able to receive the day the way it is and to look for the source in my day so that I can get satisfied. Even when my day is lousy, I can be satisfied with my life because in each moment is the expression of life. Total dynamic functioning is happening in each moment. And even though words are not the thing, words are the miracle also. It's the way we communicate, the way we think, the way we create. I had a really fun time on Friday creating this talk and drawing this. That's part of the miracle. That's part of my life. So I don't know if I got what I wanted to say, but I guess in the end, it's just that the source and the form come together in the present moment. And that's mindfulness. Continuous mindfulness. Okay, thank you very much. Yes. Thank you. Too bad we can't escape our life. So that's when they say nirvana and samsara come up together, right?
So in that sense, it's not too bad that we can't escape.
Uh-huh. And you'll be there. Yeah, right. Yeah. And the more we accept our karma, the more peaceful you can be with it. That's what I keep telling my friend. I guess she needed to be with a Zen person this whole week because she's had so many losses. And I just kept saying, oh, well, you have to accept your losses and you have to find a deeper miracle. And I just said that a million times. She's sick of it. That's the silver lining of difficult times. These difficult times force you to deepen your spirituality, or you can't stand it, right? So hopefully what I pray is that Clouds and Water helps people deepen their understanding. That's the only reason we're here, in my opinion, is so that when difficult times come, you know how to mine, M-I-N-E, drill down even deeper to no birth, no death, no permanence, no impermanence, you know, that level of life. Somebody else?